Broadway Energy, the podcast with your host, Stephen Reardon. That's me. Thanks so much for being here. Okay, it's been a minute since we had a new episode of BBE, and that's because it's just too hot to talk. Just kidding. It's because it's summertime, and really, summer is a time where much of the local theaters go dark for a minute. There's one theater that is going strong that never goes dark. It is, in fact, called the Lab Theater Project, and they have a brand new show currently running, which we're going to get to a little bit later. But first, I want to tell you all about what Lab Theater Project does, if you are unaware like I was. They give voice to new works and new playwrights and new artists, and I'm so happy they exist. To have a theater right here in Tampa Bay that's willing to do that because they believe and care about new artists, it just makes my heart full. So today we get to speak to the founder of Lab Theater Project. He's with me today in the studio. His name is Owen Robertson. Owen, welcome to Big Broadway Energy.
Thank you very much, Stephen.
It's really nice to meet you. And when I say you are a man of many talents, I'm not talking nonsense. At Lab, you serve as the primary producer, the director, the set and lighting designer, the dramaturg, the director of education, business manager, researcher, and the VP of the board.
Yep, that's it.
You don't have a whole lot of time to do other things. You kind of live at the Lab Theater Project.
I do, but I do have another job I work at. But yeah, it's pretty much.
It's pretty awesome. Talk to us about why it's so important to do the work that Lab Theater Project does.
So when I started Lab, it was really coming to the realization that I was working on my MFA and just realizing and recognizing the path for new work and how difficult the path is. I've wanted to start my own company for a long time. And then I decided that I wanted to add an exponential increase to the challenge by saying, let's just do new work. The original pathway started for my cohort in my MFA program and really helping them and all of us get our work done and everything. And then as the years have gone by and Lab's reputation has grown, we're now a company that's getting 300 to 500 submissions a year of new work. And then we also get the benefit to train and develop new artists in our community who very often get a chance to make their start and professional start on Lab stage, and then they go on and do other things.
Yeah, and it's so important, I think, to foster the artists that we have in Tampa Bay. As artistic director of my own theater company, I know the challenges of creating theatrical experiences on a shoestring. And what I love about your mission in that, in addition to creating space to produce important work, which is really what you do, you are creating space for artists to grow and thrive and do so in a nurturing environment.
Yeah, the grow as artists is a really important aspect to what we do. We do things like, for example, at the end of each show, we have a discussion with our cast and everything. And the question, I always put the question of, what can we do better? And that's a question we ask every show. We ask it of ourselves. We ask it of our cast. We ask it of the board and everything like that. We always have that conversation. How do we grow? How do we be better?
It seems too, must be a really fun place to be, because it seems like I was going through your seasons, and it's almost like you have a repertory company. People come back again and again to do this work with you.
Yeah, there are some very consistent faces that like to work with us and stuff, but I'm always looking for new faces, and I'm always trying to cycle through it.
Without a doubt. The Lab Theater Project has produced a work of 67 playwrights, given the first professional opportunity to 23 theater artists in the community, and helped 4 local playwrights have the work receive full productions. And if you're not in the industry, that might just be numbers and stats to you, but it's so much more. And I want to ask you, because I really appreciate people that understand the struggle, what do you love most about working with new artists?
Oh, for new artists, I think one of the coolest things that happens with us, working with a new artist and everything like that, and helping them grow, helping them get on the stage and figuring out what they're doing and everything like that. And then what I refer to as the legacy moment, when they suddenly recognize, because it's new work and everything like that, they suddenly realize that they're the first one who ever created the role. And they suddenly have this epiphany of that. And we sell in our lobby the scripts that have been published, that we've produced. And we can open up the script, you know, how we all did in high school and in
college,
theater,
and continuing to do it.
Let's look and see who did this first. Now they get to be that person. They get to be on that page in that script.
It becomes immortal. You become immortal a little bit, right? That's what's so cool. I remember going to conservatory theater training when I was right out of high school, and I was reading play after play and seeing some of my like professors in those original cast lists and being like, oh, one day, man.
That's it.
I love it. So your background's really interesting, and it seems to me that education is really something that you value. How has education played a part in the artist that you've become?
I think education's a part of it is because it's what's guided me. The really heavy educational background has guided me to be very focused on creating a nurturing and safe place for my artists and my playwrights. It's a collaborative environment, and I work very hard to maintain the collaboration You can get into directorial environments where it's more authoritarian. You're being told what to do as an actor, and we don't work that way. It's new work, so it's I hire smart people and smart actors because I want their collaborative ideas on what the roles are, because that's how we help our playwrights. We find through the collaboration and everything like that, they get to be able to discover, and they being playwrights, discover, did it work the way they intended? Is this character doing what they intended to do? Is it conveying what they intended to do? Or is a actor discovering something new that I didn't think about or need to think about and put into the script and modify the script? A lot of our playwrights, after production, go back and write and make revisions and change it again.
I think dramaturgy is part of, it's got to be part of a new playwright's experience. You have to do it. And I think a lot of times, again, if you're a writer and want to see your work and you're on a shoestring and you rent a space, you don't have that collaboration from people. You're like, I'm just going to put it out there. And then oftentimes, to your point, like, it doesn't land right. And then what do you do? If you don't have any other voices to say, what about this? Or why did you make this choice? It's so hard to form and shape those new stories.
Yeah, with the dramaturgical side of the work that we provide for playwrights, I'll give an example. We had a playwright come in with a work and we were working on everything like that. And he made a reference to something that doesn't exist in the world of his play. And I came to him and said, hey, we have a small problem here. You have this big piece that's important and it doesn't work. His big piece was he had something that was happening in a basement in New Orleans. There are no basements in New
He'd
Orleans.
He'd be swimming in the basement.
Correct. And that's, we came to it and had that conversation. And of course, he had to go in and make adjustments to the play and everything. But he did. And the recognition that he was like, oh, that doesn't work. That's a dramaturgical thing. And that's what we do. And it's not all the time, but very often we find things and we kind of like, we need to see about that. And then sometimes it's just providing that other side of things. Is this interaction working the right way? Do we need to tweak it? We're not getting what I want out of this. And a lot of that happens not just in the reads that we do, which we do several, but then also when we're up, it's up on its feet and it's working. And as a director and you're working with the actors and playing with it and playing with the story and everything like that, it takes tweaking and it takes taking input from the actors and watching them work with the lines and go, hey, this moment is not working. And we think it's this. And I'm going back to a playwright, and very often our playwrights are very open and receptive to that and make the changes.
I love that. And I love that, again, it's a nurturing space. Even as a director and as an actor, both times, like when I'm an actor, if I have a director experience that is very rigid, it just takes the joy out of the work.
Yep.
And the same thing goes as a director. When I direct, if I don't have actors challenging me or asking me or bringing their own ideas, like I don't feel creative.
Three rules of theater. Be on time, know your lines, have an idea.
Exactly.
That's it.
I love that.
And you're golden.
And you're golden, and you can really like get on the road to success, right?
Yep.
So you started your education and career in D.C.
Yep.
Which is D.C. itself, if you've never been there, it's got great theater. It's like one of those cities, too, that I think people go for the thing that D.C. is known for. But if you stay a couple extra days and you look around and you think, wow, so many great musicals got their start in D.C., so
yep.
much great Shakespeare productions
yep.
and things that have gotten to Broadway start in D.C. So from D.C. to Tampa, what it got you to Tampa Bay?
So the company I worked for closed their office where I was in D.C. and everything, and they said, you have a choice, New Jersey, Florida, or California. And I wasn't going to New Jersey. Because I just didn't
smart move.
I just didn't want to be there. So I went up in Florida in 2003. They moved me down here and I worked and worked my way for that company for about 5 years until I decided to hang my own shingle for my own company. And then did that for 3 years and that didn't pan out because the recession. And then in 2010, I decided that I was done with chasing corporate America and I was going to be permanent full-time artist.
Owen, you are speaking to my soul, brother. I did the same thing in 2023, corporate America for 27 years. And yep. then I said, you know what? I don't know how many more years I have on this planet. I'm going to do something that I want to do.
Yeah.
And it's scary and it's uncertain. But what I've found just in the 2 short years I've been doing it is that people want to help you. They want to see you
yep.
succeed.
Yep.
And it's a new story. Like we've told ourselves, we can't do this. It's too scary. What's going to happen? But guess what? If you ask for help, people are like, yeah, I'll help you.
Yeah, that's mostly true. You've got to do a lot for yourself.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you got to work hard.
2010 was not just full-time artist, but also back to school and restart my education and everything. And I did that as well. And honestly, I haven't stopped. I'm still doing it.
No, we'll talk about that a little later too, yeah. man. You are a busy dude. Let's talk about Lab's latest project, The Cross and the Saber.
Sure.
Talk to us a little bit about the premise.
Wendy Graff, who wrote the play, originally started the play back in 2003. That's where the idea began, under Bush W. And the idea of the play is really this exploration young prophet gets arrested because he won't put the government-prescribed things into his church. He won't put the directed things that the new government is telling him you have to have in your church and things like that. He won't hang a flag in the sanctuary. He won't put pro-life material out in his church. He supports the LGBTQ community. Good heavens. Anyway, he gets arrested. And it's this play that explores where, you know, kind of, you know, it's meant to be in the not-too-distant future. Unfortunately, when we selected the play, the not-too-distant future has come running right up on top of us. And so the play is really spends a lot of time exploring First Amendment, Christian nationalism in politics, weaponization of the DOJ, just what are our rights and what is our voice and what is it going to be and where what's the definition of Christianity? And that's what this play is looking at and going after.
Boy, boy, seems like everything that is old is new again.
And then Wendy added to it, because she started in 2003, but over the course of revisions and things, then the AI component came into it. And so here she used AI to be what happens if part of the legal system becomes artificial and is run by artificial intelligence. So his entire handling through the legal system is by androids. So his primary investigator is an android, the prosecutor is an android, his defense attorney is an appointed android. It's really spooky to think about. There's a courtroom scene, and when you go through that scene and everything like that, it's terrifying because he doesn't have a voice. And it's what this becomes, is this question with AI coming, are we going to have a voice? Is our voice going to be stifled and shut off?
What are some of the reactions the show's receiving?
Everybody who's seen it has been blown away with it. They come out of it, and some people come out, they've been crying because of it and because of what it reveals to them. Some people just come out going, this is a really important conversation. It needs to be seen. Some are just, it's a great show and very timely. And everybody, maybe we put it up at this time of year on purpose. I looked at seeing the 250th anniversary and went, this is my expression and my opportunity to speak my voice during this time.
I love theater that tells the stories that theater was created for. Right. Anytime there was a new historical theatrical era, it always led with stories that needed to be told.
Our biggest tenet that we go with is tell me a good story. That's the number one tenet, and that's the number one criteria by which we look at scripts. I don't look at them whether they're political or not. That's a very minor piece to anything we look at. But with the growing world we live in, the works that are coming through to me are becoming more and more political. They have a voice. They have certain things to say. And that's what it is. These playwrights are holding mirrors up to society. If we don't like the picture of it, change society. But the mirror is being held up for us to remember, to see. Think about what Arthur Miller did during the McCarthy era. He wrote Crucible in response to his own trial and his own attack by McCarthy.
That's right.
And that's what playwrights do. Normal Heart was written in response to the AIDS epidemic. And when it produced more information about AIDS, the review of that produced more information about AIDS than anybody had printed anything in that time. And that's what theater can do.
It's really what
it's most important role is to affect and change society and culture.
Couldn't say it better myself. I love it so much. Now, I was going through your website in past seasons, and I was so struck with how many people seem to have gotten their start at Lab. So one of my former high school students, Will Statzer, got his start at Lab. Caroline Jett, Tiffany Ficus, Lance Felton, Samantha Parisi, Bill DeYoung are all artists that are local and love going back and working with you all. And it's all people that I admire. And we said it before we started recording, it's a small town, but town full of talent.
Yep.
And every time I do auditions for any show I direct, I'm always in awe of the new people I'm seeing. It's not the same 10 people. It's new people every time I hold auditions. And I think it's so great that not only are new people encouraged to stay in Tampa Bay and not go find their fortune somewhere else, you can actually work and get and earn your stripes and cut your teeth and learn how to be at rehearsal and learn how to do all these things right here in your hometown. So I just wanted to thank you for doing that and for being a place that we can rely on for things like that.
Thank you.
So what's next for Lab?
Next on our slate, our next show coming up in September is a show called As We Like It, which is a play on As You Like It. The premise of the play is that this family is out in the woods. They're rehearsing Midsummer Night's Dream and As You Like It in the woods. And then all of a sudden, two intruders come into the group. And very quickly, we realize that we're not just sitting out in the woods. It's 1942 Poland, and we're in the woods hiding from the Nazis.
Oh, wow.
And it's a Jewish family that's hiding in the woods doing this for the mental health of one of their family members. And the two guys who intrude are Nazis, who are AWOL from the Army. This is an original work. This is actually not only is an original work, but it's also a Eugene O'Neill Center semifinalist.
Oh, wow.
So it's very, very cool. It's the first one of the O'Neill Center's semifinalists that we've put up. And I'm very excited about it. It's actually our last play of the season. I'm very excited about it because it's a absolute personification of what we do. Pushing Daisies by Al Taylor was a play that Al brought, came in through our workshop, our playwriting workshop, and wrote the play and came through the workshop. And by the end of the workshop, it was determined, we made a decision about that we were going to produce it. And so now it goes from inception to production.
Oh, wow. That is so cool.
Yep.
If someone is a new playwright and would like to submit, is there a process for that?
So there is a process. There's our normal process. If you're a new playwright and you've already got a play done or and everything like that and you want to submit it, we take year-round submissions. We're very communicative to our playwrights. So you don't submit it and disappear for 8-9 months with no communication. You submit it, you get a response within a couple of days saying, we have it. This is when we'll start looking at it. And that's usually January-ish we start looking at the next season. So we're actually coming to the back end now of our process of selecting for season 12. But the other way they can do something is watch out on for our workshop, our playwriting workshop, which is we're getting ready to start it up again in the fall. And if you're local, you can come in and work with us. There's a $250 fee to be part of it. We take you from the beginning, your pitch. We call it pitch to production. And so we take your play from pitch and we take it all the way through. You will finish the workshop with a completed draft, hopefully. It's a really solid draft, but you'll have a finished draft, which if you're a writer and everything like that, that's your hardest thing. Once the draft is done, editing is not so hard. Draft is the hardest thing to get done. It's a 12-week course. It's a master's level course. You work hard and you get assignments, you press. Depending on how many people we have in the class, there might be just beyond, if it's a small class, it's just me. If it's a bigger class, then I bring in mentors who are other playwrights from around the country. For example, Wendy Graff is one of my mentors, and she helps out with things, and she's a seasoned and experienced playwright to work with.
And speaking of things being challenging, I noticed in your bio that you're currently pursuing your PhD.
Correct.
In education.
Yep.
Tell me about why that is a goal for you.
The goal for the doctorate was to try and get myself in a position just to expand my knowledge in education, because I feel like we're in an area where too many people discount what the value of the arts is. And so I feel like I have an opportunity to be part of that voice and part of that discussion. Plus, I wanted to expand what I could do for my own, for lab, and what our educational offerings are within lab, and be able to get those things done.
Bravo, sir. All right, last question I ask all my guests, because I want everyone to remember that art is not a nice to have, but a must have, right? So I ask what art means to you or how you use it in your everyday life outside of just the actual work that you're doing.
I answer that probably a little differently. I know my world through the art that I participate in. I understand people by the art that I work in through theater. I understand how to interact and deal and interact with people and make changes, conflicts, everything like that. I understand cultural differences through the art that I do and through the work that I do. Art's extremely important to me. Theater is extremely important to me. It is what defines my world and shows my world to me, and it influences everything I do.
Before we say goodbye, I want to talk to you a little bit about the on-demand component that Lab Theater Project does.
We're unique in that our shows normally run 3 weekends. But at the last weekend, on the Thursday before the last weekend, we start running an on-demand aspect of our show. You can, just like any other on-demand, go on to our link, buy a ticket, and for 24 hours you can watch however many times you want to, whenever you want, in your home.
Oh, that's so cool.
But what's really cool about it provides a tremendous path for our playwrights. Those who can't come down and be here and everything like that, they have a way to get their families or their friends or people they want to see their work be able to see the work.
And it gives you an opportunity to sell more tickets.
Yep, absolutely.
And really give more people that opportunity who aren't here. So I really think that's a brilliant idea. I might steal that from you. The Cross and the Saber plays through this weekend and it closes on July 19th. So for tickets, or if you want to know anything more about the programs that Lab Theater Project does, if you're a playwright and interested in maybe doing a masterclass with this genius across the table from me, please go to labtheaterproject.org for all the information. Owen Robertson, thank you for joining me on BBE, and thank you for everything you do for emerging artists here.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, dear listener, for joining us on Big Broadway Energy. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the show, email me, will you? BigBroadwayEnergy, all one word, @gmail.com. Until next time, friends, be kind, be curious, and keep dreaming. Bye, everybody.